Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, the H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information, Please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, the H.J. Heinz Company will send $10 in war stamps, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Ladies and gentlemen, in its customary impromptu manner, Information, Please, continues tonight, offering its veteran trio, John Curran of the New York Sun, Oscar Levant, and Franklin P. Adams, along with our welcome guest, the moderator of the famous America's Town Meeting of the Air radio program, Mr. George V. Denny, Jr. We're going to begin with a question from Estelle Reese of New York City, and it's a musical question, gentlemen. Each of the following musical excerpts, there'll be three of them, suggests a possible point of invasion by United Nations forces. What are they? Let's have the first, and let's get two out of three. Mr. Levant?
Santa Lucia.
That's
Santa
right.
Lucia.
Now, what point of invasion, a possible point, does that suggest to you, Oscar?
Italy.
Yes, and more, even more locally than that. Localize it a bit more.
Santa Lucia? Santa Lucia. That's all it goes.
it's a song.
Sicily.
Sicily? Naples, it would be, I think. Naples is the place where Santa Lucia is sung, or am I wrong, Mr. Levant?
Not in the edition I have, I don't know.
I think it is. As a matter of fact, one of the lines of Santa Lucia refers to thee, sweet Napoli, what charms are given.
I sing it in Italian, I don't know what I'm singing.
but I think Italy would be a good enough answer, Mr. Levant. Now let's have the second one. Mr. Adams, you were whistling between your teeth, weren't you? That's beautifully done.
I don't know what it is, though.
Mr. Levant?
That's one of those tip of the tongues. I can sing the whole thing. It sounds Dutchy to me.
You think it might be the invasion point might be Holland?
It's a gavotte, isn't it?
It's a Norwegian dance by Grieg.
Is that right?
That's right. Learning all the time, Mr. Levant. That would be, the invasion point there, of course, would be Norway and maybe Norway. And now the third and last, we have to get this one right, gentlemen. Mr. Denny?
That's France.
That's France.
Goodbye, Broadway. Hello, France.
That's right. Well, that gives us two out of three. We might invade through Naples, through Norway, through France, through any two of them, or perhaps...
Maybe Holland. Maybe it would be Dutch.
Yes, we have to. Haven't got enough music for that, Mr. Levant. Here's one from Wiley Kilpatrick of Alexandria, Georgia. Alexandria, Virginia, I beg Georgia's pardon and Virginia's pardon. If these persons had met on Mr. Denny's program, the town meeting of the air, what subject might they have debated? Here are the first set of persons, Senators Lodge and Root. Mr. Denny?
They might have been debating whether we should join the League of Nations
yes,
or not.
Yes, that's quite right. And how would they have lined up?
1918. Senator Lodge would have been opposed and Senator Root for it.
Yes, it might have been a good program for you.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry we weren't running at that time.
Seems to me almost as if you were. You've been on a long time. How about this set? Pussyfoot Johnson and Al Smith. White, Mr. Curran.
That would be on the merits or demerits of prohibition.
On the what? Prohibition?
Merits or demerits of prohibition.
Well, that's being fair.
It's on the pleasure or not being fair.
Yeah. And how would they have lined up?
Pussyfoot Johnson was a famous crusader for prohibition. In fact, he had his eye knocked out while he was crusading.
Yeah, quite a career.
There's a moral in it. Governor Smith is still living.
You mean we might still have a debate, huh?
And now here's another set of debaters.
An idea.
It is an idea, Mr. Denny. How about this set? Randolph Paul and Joseph Martin.
Mr. Denny?
The Rummel plan.
The Rummel plan. How would they have lined up on your show?
Well, there's no doubt about it. Mr. Paul would have been against the Rummel plan.
Yes?
And well, that leaves Joe E. Martin, the head of the Republican leader in the House, for it.
Yes. You've never had either of these personalities on your show, have you, Mr.
Been
Denny?
Trying to get Mr. Randolph Paul and Mr. Rummel together for some time.
You should have said it a little louder.
Why don't you get down to Macy's?
I did.
That gives us 3 out of 3. And sends us on to a question which comes from Washington, D.C., thought up by Mr. D.W. O'Donohue, Jr. What was the occupation of the person whose leisure time activities are described in poetry as follows? He loves to hear the little brooks a-gurgling. What was his main occupation, Mr. Adams?
He was a policeman.
Oh, practically the policeman's opposite, seems to me.
He was a bum.
Listen to the merry village chime.
That's right. You've got the right selection, but you've got the wrong occupation.
The merry village chime.
When the what? When the enterprising...
Burglar isn't burgling.
Yes. And the cutthroat isn't occupied in crime. He loves to hear the little brook a-gurgling and listen,
and
to,
listen
the merry
to the merry village chime.
You will hear from New York's finest in the morning, Mr. Adams. Yes, a burglar, not a policeman, in other words. Now, suppose the leisure time... Mr. Adams, are you dissatisfied with Gilbert and Sullivan?
Policeman sings it.
Yes, but he's describing a burglar, isn't that right?
That's right.
He sits among his boys. That's his leisure time, Mr. Kieran. What's he do when he isn't doing that?
He's a village blacksmith.
That's quite right, the village blacksmith.
By Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
Yes, he goes on Sunday to the church and sits among his boys. That's quite right. And third and last, the sweetest hours that e'er I spend are spent among the lasses. Oh, Mr. Kieran.
Well, that was Robert Burns.
Robert Burns.
Yes.
Green
grow the rashes.
And what did he do with his... that was his leisure time, the time that he spent among the lasses. So what did he do as a vocation?
No, that was a serious time. As a pastime, he wrote verse and farmed.
As a matter of fact, some of those affairs did turn out rather seriously for him, Mr. Kieran. He was not only a poet, Mr. Kieran.
He was a tax... an excise man for a while, and he was also a farmer.
Yes, quite right.
Mosqueal.
Yes. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this from Mrs. William Loisel of Schenectady, New York? This one's about speeches. This might be of special interest to you, Mr. Denny.
That's putting me on the spot.
Oh, not a bit. Who made a speech? Who made a speech that won him a presidential nomination? Mr. Denny?
Mr. Lincoln did.
Which speech was that?
Well, his debates.
Oh, yes, his whole campaign. Yes, the Lincoln-Douglas debate, Mr. Adams. Mr. Adams, you have another one?
William Jennings Bryan.
Yes, I should think that would be right, Mr.
In 1896.
Kearns. I think that...
I was a page at the time.
I think that Mr. Denny was right, but I think it was the Cooper Union speech that gained the president's... the nomination
Lincoln?
For presidency.
Well, do you think it was
Lincoln.
That single speech that
well,
won the presidential nomination?
Well, so most of his biographers say.
Well, that might be. I should think that Mr. Adams' answer would be...
But isn't the other one correct, too?
Then.
I was just supporting Mr. Denny.
It's friendly of you, but I still think that Frank is righter. What did you say you were at the time, Mr. Adams?
A page.
And you grew up to be a great big column, didn't you? How about this? What presidential candidate, gentlemen, was shot while making a campaign speech? Mr. Levant.
Mayor Shermack of Chicago.
Well, he wasn't a presidential candidate.
Well, while he was a candidate.
Well, what presidential candidate was shot while making a campaign speech?
McKinley.
No, that's wrong.
Arthur.
It's a good guess. No, that's wrong,
Garfield.
Too. Now, we only have about 30 presidents. Mr. Adams?
F.D.
Roosevelt, yes. I'll have to call that one wrong.
I said Shermack. I showed subconsciously I was right.
You're near to it. Yes, Theodore Roosevelt in Milwaukee in 1912 was shot at and wounded.
Not the same Roosevelt, Mr. Levant.
I'm wrong. I know that.
Well, finally, what presidential candidate carried on his campaign from his front porch? Mr. Kieran?
Warren G. Harding.
Yes, and before Mr. Harding. Mr. Adams?
William McKinley.
Yes, that was before you were a page, wasn't it, Mr. Adams?
Yes.
That gives us, I think that sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Loisel and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. How about this one from Anna L. Bates of Mansfield, Massachusetts? I'm going to give you some famous phrases that are generally ascribed to people who actually did not utter them. Who are the real authors of these phrases? I think that's a very good question.
I did cut it with my hatchet. Who is the real author of the phrase, I did cut it with my hatchet, Mr. Kieran?
Parson Weems.
Parson Weems. Who's Parson Weems?
Parson Weems is the early kindergarten biographer of George Washington.
Yes, and he actually, did Mr. Washington ever say that?
He never did.
It was it was Parson Weems who was the liar then. How about Lafayette, we are here? Lafayette, we are here. Mr. Denny?
General Pershing is credited with it,
yes.
But one of the American consuls said it, I think.
No, you're
warm. It was supposed
warm.
To have been said by Colonel Whittlesey.
Well, now, that's a legend that I'm not familiar with, Mr. Adams. Mr. Kieran?
Well, no, but I know where you'll find it. I saw it the other day, but the name doesn't stick in mind.
We have plenty of time.
It doesn't give him any military title at all. It was his speech delivered on the 4th of July, 1917.
That's right.
In Paris, I believe.
That's right.
And this man whose name
was
doesn't
the ambassador, mind, wasn't it?
No.
No, it was. His name was Charles E. Stanton.
That's right.
And Stanton. He was the chief disbursing officer of the AEF. But wouldn't that give him a military rank?
Yes, but it, in the reference book, it didn't give his title.
Yes, well, I'm afraid we'll have to call that wrong by a hair. How about this final famous phrase, let them eat cake? Let them eat cake. Who actually said that? Oh, Mr. Levant.
Well, it was ascribed to Marie Antoinette by MGM.
Mr. Levant, you know, before MGM, there were other people.
Not that I can remember.
I know. Now, I just want to fill
Stephen
in a
little... Stephen Zweig.
No. Now we have to get this right. It's ascribed to Marie Antoinette. Actually, she never said it, as far as we know. But Rousseau, in his Confessions, says that another famous princess, whose name he doesn't give, did say, let them eat cake. Mr. Kieran, did you know that?
No, I didn't know it, but I know he couldn't have accused Marie Antoinette of it.
Why?
Well, because he was dead by the time she was supposed to have said it.
Yes, exactly, unless he had prophetic vision.
Not only that, she was fat.
From eating too much cake.
Cake.
Brioche. Well, I think that sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Miss Bates and a set of the Britannica. Now, I rather imagine we all have our own ideas about bargains. Well, Ben Grauer, our Heinz reporter, is about to tell us his. Mr. Grauer.
Yes, Mr. Fadiman, I happen to be of the same opinion as that old sage, Benjamin Franklin, who once said, it's the greatest bargain in the world to know you're getting what you pay for. I agree with Mr. Franklin because when you go into a store and ask for any of Heinz's famous 57 varieties, you can be absolutely sure you are getting what you pay for. That's been true for over three generations now. Of course, many of Heinz's ready-to-serve foods have gone to war, but you'll still find a good many, lots of them not rationed either, on your grocer's shelves. Rich Heinz peanut butter for nourishing lunchbox sandwiches, crisp old-fashioned pickles to brighten budget dishes, sparkling jellies to make your butter go further, 57 sauce, brown and yellow mustard, and other condiments and sauces to lend flavor to wartime meals. And every one of these Keystone-labeled products has all that irresistible old-time flavor, that uniform quality, those deft little touches of seasoning that have made Heinz Foods welcome guests at the American table for 74 long years.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. And now, it doesn't it, though? We'll be through in about 15 minutes, Frank. Here's one from H.A. Blair of Washington, D.C. Name one other man who has held the same cabinet post under F.D. Roosevelt, as the following have held. Now, Mr. Roosevelt, of course, has been in for three terms, so he's had a large number of cabinet offices. Frank Knox. Name another man who has held the same cabinet post as Mr. Knox in the Roosevelt cabinet at any time during any of the administrations.
Oh.
Mr. Levant.
Edison.
Edison is right,
Of New Jersey.
Quite right. And
Charles Edison.
What is the portfolio?
Navy.
Yes, Secretary of the Navy. There's still another. Claude Swanson once held that same office. Now, you get the idea, gentlemen. Now, who else beside Henry L. Stimson has held the job Mr. Stimson now holds?
I have that.
Mr. Levant.
Woodring of Kansas.
Yes, Harry Woodring. And the portfolio is?
Secretary of War.
Right, and there's still another. George H. Dern, D-E-R-N. George Dern held that portfolio. And finally, Jesse Jones. Jesse Jones. Who else has held the same office? Mr. Denny.
Secretary of Commerce.
That's quite right.
Dan Roper.
Dan Roper is quite right. Didn't,
Dan
died
recently.
Recently died, yes. And Harry Hopkins.
He has no job now.
He has a different job now.
Hickey's.
Icky's?
Interior.
Interior. Well, that's different. Right. But
Harry Hopkins was Secretary of Commerce.
Oh, yes. That's right. Yes.
Well, that gives us three secretaries out of three. Try this from Mrs. James M. Davis of Rochester. What precedes or follows these excerpts? They all have to do with being born. And the first phrase is, quote, where I was born, close quote. What famous phrase precedes that or follows that in a poem from which the phrase is taken? Quote, where I was born, Mr. Kieran.
I remember the house where I was born.
That's right.
The little window where the sun came peeping in at morn.
That never came a wink too soon, or brought too long a day.
All you need is a little push, Mr. Adams. Mr. Adams, who wrote the poem?
Thomas Hood.
Thomas Hood is right. And now another born. Why was I born? And no cracks, Levant.
Why am I living?
That's right.
From Jerome Kern.
Yes.
Not personally. Sweet Adeline, why was I born? Why am I living?
Yes, both unanswerable questions. And how about this one? Some are born, Mr. Kieran.
Some are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them. That's in a phony letter concocted in the process of making a good plot for Twelfth Night by W. Shakespeare.
That's a 100% response, Mr. Kieran. Thank you very much. Try this one. Mrs. Julia P. Woodward of Spokane, Washington. Did you just came from Spokane, didn't you, Mr. Adams?
Pretty just, yeah.
How is Spokane?
Oh, I haven't been there since Wednesday.
Hasn't changed.
Well, that was Seattle.
Well, at any rate, Mrs. Woodward turns this one in. Where did these people go together? I'm going to give you several pairs of people, and they all went someplace in each other's company. The first pair is Boswell and Johnson. Went where, Mr. Kieran?
On a journey to the Hebrides.
Yes. How do you know that?
Why, because Mr. Johnson and Mr. Boswell wrote an account of it.
Yes, what's
the journal of the journey to the Hebrides.
Yes, it's a record of that journey written by Boswell and in there. Very good, too. In the pages of the journal, as a matter of fact, they also walked into immortality together. How about Thornton Wilder and Gene Tunney? Where did they go together? Thornton Wilder? Mr. Kern?
I think they went to Greece together. They traveled abroad together.
Yes, they traveled abroad in Europe. I don't know whether...
They met G.B. Shaw, another famous man.
They went to Greece and England and all over the country.
All over the country, meeting G.B. Shaw. Mr. Tunney is the only one who hasn't won a literary prize of that famous trio, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How about Joe Barnes and Gardner Coles? Where did they go together, Mr. Denny?
They went with Mr. Wilkie around the world.
Around the world, yes. You'll find that account of the trip in
Mr. Wilkie's book, One World.
Yes. He wound up in Hartford that trip.
I wound up where?
You said that trip wound up in Hartford.
In Hartford? Now, that was its peak point, yes. get your teeth into this one. This comes from C.H. Thompson of Kansas City, Missouri. Can you place each of these number combinations in its familiar context? I'm just going to give you a number. Tell me what it means. Hill 609. Mr. Denny.
Well, that's one of the hills that the Americans captured in northern Africa, and it means the altitude.
Yes, 609 what?
Meters.
Meters above meters. Sea level, quite right. Old 98. Old 98.
It's a brand of whiskey.
What does that mean to you? Mr. Adams?
Old 98 is the number that was worn on the sweater of Tommy Harmon.
Yes, and how did that recently figure in the news?
Because he was... lost in an airplane in South America.
Yes, came back
safely. And recently and found.
Yes, and the number 98 was where else, Mr. Kieran?
On his airplane.
On his airplane, yes, quite right, on Tommy Harmon's plane. And now the third of these number combinations, upper four. Upper four, Mr. Denny?
The kid in upper four.
What is the kid in upper four, Mr. Denny?
Well, that's the... somebody wrote a poem about that in an advertisement.
It's for the New Haven...
No poem, the New Haven Railroad.
New Haven Railroad.
You're in very fast company, Mr. Yes, it's a famous advertisement of the New Haven Railroad showing a young soldier in an upper berth in a train probably taking him to...
Wasn't there a poem connected with it?
No, it may have sounded like poetry. The copywriter will be glad to have you mention his prose as poetry, but it really was prose. Advertising prose is very much like poetry. I often think they get paid by the line.
It's that big, thin line.
Yes, that's the one. How about... I think we got three out of three on that one. And now your Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, is here with a few hints to housewives on keeping the hungry male happy. Mr. Grauer.
When a Boston hostess asked Henry David Thoreau to name his favorite dish, he smiled indifferently and said, the nearest. Well, you'd probably consider yourself lucky these days if your husband were as indifferent to his meals as the sage of Walden Pond. Most men, however, are notoriously critical about their food, and they broadcast the fact from the head of the table at least once a day. But there are ways to appease these chronic critics. A few simple secrets which wise women are whispering to each other behind their ration books. They've found there's nothing like a dish of crisp, old-fashioned Heinz pickles or shimmering jellies to brighten a wartime dinner table. And they keep Heinz mustard, chili sauce, 57 sauce, and other spicy condiments handy to flatter the flavor of plain dishes. For these Keystone-labeled products have a decided flair for making foods look as well as taste better, for really tempting the masculine appetite. Now we ask, seven varieties possibly render a greater service than keeping a hungry man happy.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. Just a few minutes more, Frank. This won't last long. How about this one from Mrs. Pauline Saltzman of Grand Rapids, Michigan? This is another musical question, gentlemen. What is the invitation that's being extended in each of these musical selections that you're going to hear?
Invitation to the dance.
Now, you wait. Let's have the first. Mr. Levin.
Invitation to the dance.
Mr. Adams is just intuitive.
Ask Mr. Adams who wrote it.
Actually, it isn't.
To a waltz, it is.
To the waltz.
Weber.
Who wrote it?
C. Maria von Weber.
That's right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Call Maria von Weber.
What do you mean, that's right? Of course it's right.
That's some other tune you know, too, Adams, isn't there? And now the second of them. What invitation is being extended? An invitation to what? You know the tune, Mr. Adams, don't you?
An invitation to ignorance.
something about waltz with me or something like that.
No.
Is that Gilbert again?
No. It's a famous old song called Come to the Fair.
I never heard it.
Never heard of Come to the Fair?
Ah,
Come to the Fair, Mr. Adams, is that right? One wrong, then, and now the third and last.
My sweet embraceable you.
Mr. Levin, what invitation?
Embrace me, my irreplaceable you.
That's very pretty.
The piano's high.
And you're low.
Well, no, embrace me. That's embraceable you.
Yes,
embraceable me in this case.
Don't be a naughty baby. Come to Papa.
Come to Papa, do.
Yes, the invitation is really to Papa. The invitation is to Papa. I guess we're all right on that. How about this one? This comes from W.M. King of Los Angeles, California. Quote a line of poetry that includes each of these words. These words are very similar, but not quite the same. The first is alone. Any line of poetry that has the word alone in it.
Alone. Da, de, da, da, de, da, da, da.
What is that?
That's Groucho Marx. Remember Night at the Opera?
No wonder he's alone. Mr. Adams?
All Alone by the Telephone.
By the Telephone, yeah. What was yours, Oscar?
Alone. Da, de, da, da, de, da, da, de, da, da. It's called Alone.
You know, it doesn't sound any better. And now, Lonely, a line of poetry. Mr. Kieran?
I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er dale and hill, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils.
Beautiful, yes. From William Wordsworth. Mr. Levant?
Miss Lonely Hearts, da-da-da-da, by Irving Berlin.
You know, in another 2 minutes you won't be able to talk. I've never known him to be so vocal, have you, Frank? It's wonderful.
Lyrical.
How about this? We've had alone, we've had lonely, and now the saddest of all, forlorn. Forlorn. Mr. Adams.
This is the something all forlorn, that something with the cow with the crumpled horn.
Yes.
This is the maiden all forlorn.
Yes, that's a perfectly good word, maiden. This is the maiden all forlorn. Mr. Kieran?
Forlorn. The very word is like a knell to toll me back to my soul self.
Yes, it's from what?
Keats' Ode to a Nightingale.
Yes, very good, Mr. Levin.
Isn't that the first part of September Morn, forlorn?
Is that set to music?
It rhymes with September Morn.
I don't remember.
I've always thought it was a picture. I've been missing something. Here's one from Stella Sutherland of Oldwick, New Jersey. This is about famous contests. I want you to tell me who won them. In the first contest, the prize was a wife. Who won it? It says won here.
It says prize, too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Mr. Kieran?
Atalanta and Hippomenes ran a race.
That's a good one, yes. Who won? Who won who?
Well, there was a little guile in there, but Hippomenes won the race.
Yes, and there is another in a famous opera, Mr. Levant, in which there's a prize. And
oh, yeah, and Tannhauser. And Lohengrin or Tannhauser?
The Meistersinger.
Meistersinger. They all have contests. They always sing in contests.
Always have contests, yes. Walter von Stolzing, it says here, won Eva Pogner, daughter of the goldsmith. How about a contest in which the prize, this is no better, was a husband? Who won a contest in which the prize was a husband?
You said something there, boy.
Mr. Levant?
I never heard of such a prize.
Well, it's in Of Thee I Sing.
Oh, that's right.
Isn't that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Who wins who?
Lois Moran won William Gaxton. Winterbottom.
Diana Devereaux.
Yeah, she doesn't win.
Doesn't she?
No, Diana Devereaux. No, she's the girl from the South.
Well, doesn't she,
Mary wins.
Doesn't she win, but the husband has other plans and marries the other girl?
But he marries Mary, who is Lois Moran.
Any way to get off the plot. Let's go on to the third one. Who won a contest in which the prize was a valet?
Admirable Crichton.
No, it isn't Admiral Crichton. It's Leon Wilson, you know,
don't
that
look
valet.
That way. Who?
Oh, Charles Lawton.
Redgap.
Yes, that's it. Yes, it's the character played by Charles Ruggles.
In
Ruggles of Red Gap.
Charles Lawton.
Charles Lawton, yes. Charles Lawton. There is a Charlie Ruggles, isn't there?
You'll never be with Paramount.
Just to make it more clear. Charles Lawton was the butler and valet who is won by the character. That gives us 2 out of 3. Gee, we struggled through that one, didn't we? How about this from Harold J. Wiegand of Balakinid, Pennsylvania, and I know I'm mispronouncing that. It's Welsh, and my Welsh is very rusty. Of these adjoining states or countries, which is in the middle? South Dakota, Kansas, Nebraska. All you have to tell me is which of those states is in the middle, Mr. Denny.
South Dakota.
That would be wrong.
Nebraska.
Nebraska's right, unless they've moved things around, Mr. Denny, recently. Yeah, Mr. Adams, you haven't seen any moving, big moving.
I've just been through all of them.
And it's Nebraska's still in the middle.
Still in the middle.
Lucky Nebraska. How about the following? Honduras, Costa Rica, Nicaragua. Which is in the middle?
I'm not going to bother with that one.
Was this Honduras?
How about a guess? Mr. Kieran? Mr. Denny?
I think Costa Rica's in the middle, I think.
Oh, no, Nicaragua. You can stay out of the next one, George.
I'd better.
How about Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, Lake Huron? Which is in the middle? Mr. Adams?
Lake Michigan.
That's right, and that's the only right one we've got. That sends $57 in all bonds and stamps from Mr. Wiegan and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and that's about all we'll have time for this evening. Thank you, Mr. Denny, for the able aid you've extended this evening. Tonight, the H.J. Hines Company has paid out $171 in war bonds and stamps. You know, that's pretty big figures. And 3 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will welcome as their guests that beloved monster, Mr. Boris Karloff, and the creator of Mrs. Miniver, Jan Struther. But they will welcome them across a continent, for we will be here in New York, and Miss Struther and Mr. Karloff will answer questions from Hollywood. The whole affair, as I understand, will be done with long-distance mirrors. Please remember to send your questions and the correct answers. Don't forget the correct answers. Some of you send the questions and forget the answers. To information, please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, Ben Grauer.
The H.J. Hines Company wishes you good health and good evening. We hope you'll be with us again next Monday. And in the meantime, remember that the name H.J. Hines will bring you the best possible value for your precious blue stamps, and that the